Hey, good evening, everybody. I'm so impressed you are here at this hour. Congratulations. Thank you. I am here from the Office of Population Affairs. My name is Christina Lachance, and I'm here to talk to you about how we are introducing standards and interoperability into family planning for the purposes of quality reporting. And I'd like to acknowledge my colleagues. I uploaded the wrong version of these slides, so I rudely left them off the slide. But Johanna Goodair, Lauren Corboy, Julie Hook, and Michael Stelmack all worked with me on this project, and they definitely deserve credit here. I have no disclosures. I'm going to give you a little background about family planning, since we're kind of switching content domains from body fat to family planning. But I'm going to spend most of the talk discussing the feasibility study that we conducted and the survey that we did in the past 2 years to look at interoperability and EHR use within our network. So the Title 10 Family Planning Program has been around for 45 years. It's administered by my office within the Office of the Secretary of Health. And our mission is to help low-income men and women achieve intended pregnancies and prevent unintended pregnancies, and we also provide related reproductive health services. These are our program's cocktail statistics. We were about a $286 million program in FY14, and we served about 4 million patients across 4,100 clinical service sites. And the way we work is a little unique in that we fund 90 grantee organizations who then take the Title X money and give it down at another level to about 1,100 subrecipients. And then the subrecipient agencies send the money down further to those 4,100 clinic sites. And in case you've heard otherwise, family planning is a really good investment for taxpayers. We save about $7 for every single dollar that's invested. Very recently, last year, we introduced some quality recommendations that we worked on in collaboration with the CDC. And this is the first time that our field has had evidence-based recommendations for clinical practice. And this has inspired OPA to revisit a number of activities that we fund, but especially to revisit the data that we collect from those 90 grantees to make it more quality-oriented and to be useful for quality improvement. So our current data system is known as the Family Planning Annual Report, and it's our single uniform source of data. And right now, the grantees work with all the service sites they fund to deliver that data to us once a year in aggregate form. And because the data is in aggregate form and it's delivered to us in these predefined tables by predefined age categories, race categories, it's not super nimble. We're kind of limited in what we can use it for and what we can analyze it and the ways we can analyze it. It's largely a lot of processing count measures. We can only see at the grantee level or the state or regional level, not below that. And there's a pretty long lag time from when the data are collected to when we are looking at it in that report. So our goal is to move into the future to turn FPAR into FPAR 2.0, where we're collecting visit level or encounter level data from every single client visit people have seen within Title 10. And we want to use that data, combine it at the federal level to create clinically relevant performance measures and have greater granularity and utility and improved availability so that people at our clinics can use it for quality improvement on the ground. So in 2012, we kind of started this whole process of examining how we're going to change the system and how it's going to affect our grantees and how they report the data to us. And there are significant challenges in moving this direction because FPAR, as it's existed in the wild for the past 40 years, the instructions have been pretty loose in their data element definitions, so there's been a lot of leeway for the various grantees and service sites to implement them kind of the way that they think makes sense or see fit or how it works in their specific system. So there's kind of a lot of variation. And then there's also a lot of variation around among the reporting entities. So we fund health departments, Planned Parenthood, school-based clinics, tribal health centers, a huge diversity of health delivery settings. And then all of those systems have their own kind of network composition, so the numbers of subrecipients and service sites differ greatly. And then they all use different systems to collect and report that data to us and different workflow processes to get that data. So to corral all those challenges, we came up with this multi-pronged strategy. We're going to continue to promote the quality family planning care, try to look and assess EHR use and challenges, and also develop family planning structured data. And it's bolstered by a robust collaboration and communication platform. And I'm going to spend most of the talk talking about the second pillar, but I do want to talk about the third one really quickly. And this is work that we've done since late 2013. We've been working with a standards development organization known as Integrating the Healthcare Enterprise, and it's an international SDO. And we're working to create a standard for family planning to create structured data capture and have it reported to us in the same way. So we've been we worked with IHG in 2014 to write a profile, which is basically like a recipe book. And it dictates the way that the data should be structured and the terminologies that should be used so that any certified meaningful use, you know, EHR system can implement it and then collect the data in the same way and send it to us in the same way. So we wrote this in 2014. We tested the profile at something called the IHE Connectathon this past January. We had 5 vendor systems tested in test environments, and everybody passed successfully. And we have a lot of kind of tweaks and improvements to make to the profile, but it was a really good start. So these are the data elements that are in the profile, and it's aligned with what we want for SPAR reporting. There are 35 of them. Everything on the left is largely demographic or vital signs. Everything on the right are the family planning data. And some of these are data that they're already collecting, and some of the variables are brand new. So while we were working with IHE, we were also simultaneously working to examine the state of use, you know, EHR use and systems and burden and what's going on in the wild there. And so we contracted with John Snow Inc. For a 2-year study. And I'm going to talk just about 2 parts of that study today, and those are the 9 interviews and structured deep dives we did with the 9 grantee networks, and then a survey that we fielded this past spring among all of our clinic sites. So we were limited to only engaging with 9 grantees for the feasibility study, and we really, again, wanted to do kind of a deep dive into their workflow and data collection and analyses processes. And so we ended up with 1 grantee from 9 of the 10 HHS regions throughout the country, and you can see them along the left there. And so the final sample was 2 federally qualified health centers, 5 health departments, 1 Planned Parenthood, and 1 not-for-profit. And even though there were 9, they were kind of selected to represent the proportion of those agency types across our entire network. They had a variety of structures, and they varied widely in the number of Title X clients that they served, so as few as 2,000 in Nevada and over 120,000 in North Carolina. And then 3 of the agencies were using eClinicalWorks, 2 were on NextGen, 1 was on Success EHS, and 2 were on State Built Systems. This is kind of a summary table of how the data they are currently collecting align with the data that we want them to collect for FPAR 2.0. And all the grantees are across the x-axis, and all the data elements are down the y-axis. And the colors are, the green is if they're capturing electronically and it does align. Orange is electronic capture, but it doesn't align exactly. Yellow represents capture going on only on paper. And red is they're not collecting at all. So again, it's kind of good news. There's a lot of green going on, but it's only 9 grantees, so it's hard to know what to make of it. The orange in this section, a lot of these are kind of the demographic elements, and so we think it's because we've modified the response options slightly, and so it's not a perfect match. Here, this is blood pressure, height, and weight, and these are dictated by meaningful use, so we think that's why there's a lot of green. These data elements were already mandated. They've been collecting them for years, hence the green. And then the ones at the bottom here were all the kind of new elements that they hadn't been collecting before. So it wasn't surprising that there wasn't a great match. Skip through this one real quick. We were looking at how much burden it would be for grantees to make changes to their systems to transition to this new model. And they did some initial estimates based on those 9s and extrapolated them across all of our grantees. And this slide is just showing that extrapolation based on grantee size. And so the contractor proposed that it would cost a large grantee with over 29 subrecipients approximately $13,000 or $14,000 to make this transition, and a small grantee only around $10,000. But this is not an insignificant cost for our network. There's a really resource-poor environment, so we are very conscious of any costs we're going to be putting on them. So I'm going to switch gears and talk about the survey that we fielded this past spring, because we got some interesting information from the 9 case profiles, but it wasn't hardly enough for project planning purposes. So this past spring, we fielded a survey inviting about 4,600 Title X contacts in our clinic database to participate. 37% of the folks invited ended up completing a survey. It was in the field for about 35 days. And so we ended up with a sample size of about 1,700 folks, and over half of them were at the service site level, which was great. The data I'm about to show you, there's a lot of limitations to them. There definitely was some selection bias going on. They're not generalizable or nationally representative, and really it's a convenient sample, and the purpose was really for project planning and not for a larger purpose than that. So just kind of keep that caveat in mind. So these are the respondent characteristics. Over a third of the respondents ended up being from the southeast part of the U.S. Mississippi, for some reason, had a huge response, so we're happy about that, but a little confused. Over two-thirds of the folks who participated identified their role as a clinic administrator or manager, as opposed to like a clinician or front desk staff. Over two-thirds, or about two-thirds, worked in a health department setting, and 38% of them reported seeing fewer than 1,000 Title X visits in 2014, so not a lot of Title X visits at all. And then of the 1,700 folks who responded, we ended up with about half of them stating that they used electronic health records or medical records, either alone or in conjunction with other electronic systems to do their FPAR reporting. And then this is showing you that of the health departments who reported using any electronic system, only a third of them were using an EHR. And if you look over to the Planned Parenthood column, like that's a pretty significant gap between health departments and the other agency types that you see listed here. So we know that our providers have been slower in public health to implement and adopt EHR. A lot of them did not participate in meaningful use. This shows that over 20% of our network was using NextGen, 10% were on eClinical Works, and the rest were in single digits percentage-wise. And this is probably really hard to see for everybody here, but this is just showing among the HR users who was collecting the data in a way that we wanted, that we were prescribing. And it turned out that the vital signs and smoking status were the most likely to be collected in terms of accordance with the 2.0 definition. And again, we think this is because we aligned with meaningful use. And then of those collecting the element electronically, we asked, were they capturing it in a structured versus an unstructured field? Because we know that structured fields are much easier for data extraction, and unstructured fields are like open text, and you can pull nothing from them, really. So here, smoking status was the most likely to be captured in a structured field. And as you kind of go down the list into more the new data elements and the more family planning data elements, the structured capture drops off quite a bit. And so we've been trying for a long time to figure out how many folks in our network are using certified systems, and we've asked them in a few different ways, and the data aren't very great. So we thought for this study we would try to create a proxy measure, and so we looked at who was collecting all four variables, height, weight, diastolic and systolic blood pressure, in a structured format, and only about 36% of the folks in the sample said that they were using structured format for all those variables, so it's possible that few of them are on certified systems. It could be an underrepresentation. It might have been the way we asked the question, so I'm not really fully sold on this, but it's not the proportion that we would hope for. We asked a question about capacity to exchange health information, and about 23% of the EHR users reported being connected to a health information exchange, and it was more likely for the subrecipients and the server sites to be connected than the grantees. And 60% of them used the health information exchange to look at immunization, lab orders, and results. Between 30 and 40 used it for care summaries, e-prescribing, medication lists, and referrals. And very few were reporting quality measures or reporting vital records on the HIE. And then we asked another question about how their site was currently exchanging specific categories of data, whether it was within their EHR, using secure email, using paper, or some other method. And while over a third of them said that they were doing lab orders, receiving results, and sending prescriptions within the EHR, we still found a lot of paper-based data exchange happening. And health departments were more likely to be using paper versus other agency types, and agencies with fewer visits were more likely compared to those with greater visits. And even among the EHR users, there still was a lot of paper-based data exchange going on. So these assessments have shown that our network for family planning is only somewhat ready for a standards-based interoperable FPAR 2.0. The feasibility study demonstrated some helpful qualitative findings, but I did not touch on it at all in this presentation. But they did identify some major barriers or concerns regarding the new data elements and workflows. And we do have, you know, a lot more rich information now about what's going to be the biggest barriers for them to transition. And also helped us identify some technical assistance and resources that we can provide to them potentially in the future to help smooth this transition. But at the end of the day, a lot of the cost and burden estimates are going to be need to be revisited, because all of this work was done in the absence of this family planning standard being implemented. And so some of the costs could come down once this standard becomes available for adoption and implementation within the HR vendor systems. And then I didn't really talk about this at all, but I wanted folks who might be interested to let them know that we've been working again with IAG for the past year to try to make some critical decisions about how to best de-identify the data set that we're going to receive from the grantees. And so we have an upcoming public comment period. It's probably going to open in December, right around the holidays, and go through January. And it's going to help, it's going to lay out all the algorithms that we're going to use to determine the best methods for de-identifying the data. So if you would love to participate, we'd love to have you. And you can find the documents up at IAG.net under the public comments. And if you email me, I'd be happy to share all that with you. This is how you can reach my team, fpar2.0@hhs.gov. We do have a blog that I haven't had time to update, but that's the blog. And I'd like to acknowledge the data analysts who helped me put this presentation together. And thank you for your time. Okay. Measures per se, we're working with IAG to structure the data so that it can inform the measures. So the measures that we are interested in, we're only going to start with a couple of them, and it's about kind of proportions of users being screened, and proportions of users using the most or moderately effective FDA-approved methods, and then being screened for chlamydia, people who are being screened for BMI, hypertension, tobacco use, and people who are being screened for their pregnancy intentions. These are the measures that we're looking to start with, that those 35 data elements will inform.
Okay. Other questions?
All right, so it's going, gone. No other questions? Thank you very much. It's been a very productive session. It's interesting, engaging. So I would request for the presenters to just maybe stay for a couple of minutes in case there are shy question askers. So we'll stay here for a couple of minutes. If you have any questions, just go ahead and come talk to us individually. Thanks.